Hi.
Hello, how are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so bad at computers. I'm so, yeah.
They're the worst, aren't they? It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. I treasure every chance I get to talk with my friend Jenny Lawson. I revere the opportunity because I know it's never an easy thing for her. I know that something like just chatting on a podcast takes a lot out of her. And like I said, we're pals. It's nothing personal. It's just hard because her mind can make things difficult. Jenny Lawson is an author, memoirs and essays, New York Times number one best-selling books like Let's Pretend This Never Happened and Furiously Happy. She has a brand new book just came out called Broken, and Jenny's writing is hilarious. It's wise, warm, down-to-earth, irreverent, and it's often about the mess that comes with chronic mental illness. She deals with severe depression and anxiety, has for many years. And it can get pretty rough. It really shuts her down sometimes. Other times, she does well. And when she chooses to spend some of that time when she's doing well to talk with me, I'm honored and always delighted because she's a gas. Jenny is a wife, a mom, a pet owner, a bad taxidermy enthusiast, and also now the operator of a bookstore, having just opened a bookstore in San Antonio called Nowhere. Jenny and I spoke from our respective homes, several states apart. Congratulations on the new book.
Thank you. I cannot believe it's like sort of finished. I mean, it's actually
Yeah.
gonna come out. It's real.
That's got to feel great and not at all
Oh,
terrifying.
it's fine. It's fine. You just lay yourself bare and tell people your most shameful secrets, and
Yeah.
it's fine. It's fine. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's emotional nude pics going out
That's exactly
into
what it
the
is.
universe.
I always feel so bad because it takes years for me to write a book, and I think the maybe average person. It doesn't take that long, but I'm just like, you know what? I have to recover in between chapters. Like sometimes they can be just exhausting. And,
Yeah.
yeah.
Because of why?
Well, because when I'm writing about something like it, when I'm writing about depression or anxiety or suicidal ideation or something like that, very often getting deep enough into it to really write with. To write authentically, I have to be in a bad place. And so it can take a really long time for me to feel safe and strong enough to go there because I know that I'm gonna have to be there long enough to work through some things that are not gonna be easy.
Why do you have to go there? Can't you just report on what you've seen previously?
Sometimes I can. I mean, I definitely have a, so many years of experience of dealing with the same thing sort of over and over again. But typically, I tend to write the best about things that I'm going through right at the moment. So for me, like a lot of times when, I'm dealing with a depression and I really want to get out of it, one of the best ways that I can get out of it is by writing it down. And I don't know what it is about finishing that chapter that sometimes it's like the monster is caught in those pages and I can walk away from it.
When I was writing my book about depression and memoir, I found that the more I wrote, the more connections I started making. Like I would say, oh, here was this crazy thing that happened when I was 15, and here was this crazy thing that happened when I was 40. Oh, I get it. And it was almost like reading a novel. Like, of course the character had to do that because of what happened back there. Do you get that too?
I do. I do. I see these patterns that I don't recognize until they are complete. And it's, in a way, it's very therapeutic and helpful. And I always, you know, I'll bring my book to my psychiatrist and be like, here's more of me. but at the same time, you know what, I think a lot of times it can be helpful to see the patterns, but it can also be a little upsetting to see the patterns that you know are never going to go away, if that makes sense. You know, that has been, I mean, I've had depression forever and I've had anxiety. It's like my earliest memory. But I've finally gotten to the point where they've diagnosed me with treatment-resistant depression, which basically just means, like, you're fucked, but, like, in a nicer sort of way. And it's sort of a misnomer because there are still treatments that work. It's just that generally I've gone through so many of them, and generally they don't last for more than a year before they start to just kind of wear off and have to switch to something else. So that was a big part, I think, of this process of writing this, of realizing this is never going to get better. I mean, it's
going to get solved.
It's that exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm going to have really high highs and really low lows. And this pattern will continue for the rest of my life. And that's okay. And in a way it was sort of freeing to know that, you know, I don't have to, it's not like I'm choosing to not be cured, you know?
Yeah, there's not an answer that you're not getting.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not like you didn't explain it properly. It's just that my brain does not work for the treatments that are currently available.
Like, if it's a murder mystery, there's no monologue by the detective at the end explaining how it all worked.
Exactly.
It's just a detective shrugging his shoulders and walking away from the scene.
Exactly. He just points at the body and you're like, yep, a body.
That's a body, all right.
Yeah. And then you go and you get a drink and that's it.
Because you're the kind of person I can ask this question, did it make you feel like kind of a badass that you have treatment-resistant depression?
It kind of did, because first of all, I have survived it this long, which makes me feel like if I've survived it this long, I can continue to survive it forever. But also because it's so tough, like the disorder or disease itself is so tough, but I'm tougher. Like, I'm still here, you know, I'm still trucking, I'm still trying different treatments, and I'm still, you know, I mean, I may not work like the typical neurotypical, you know, person, and my output and productivity and everything looks different than the average person, but I still get shit done, you know, just slowly. Yeah.
Glad you're recognizing that. I have two questions. One is about right now, and one is about a broader period. So we live in chaos and madness in the world today. Mm-hmm. How are you doing today?
Today, I'm doing pretty okay. Yesterday was a bad day, and I was very concerned because typically I sort of go on a week-long cycle of up and down and up and down, and I was very concerned because yesterday was a dark sort of day, and I thought, oh, I really don't want to have to get into this. Like, please head, please work, please just give me another week. And then I woke up today and I was able to think and function and take a shower. And so I am just taking full advantage of it. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I deal worked out with your neuroreceptors. I call them the night before. We get everything ready to go for an interview.
Let's always do this.
I'm doing comparatively well, and I'm feeling a little guilty about it because it's been a rough year for everybody. In my case, launched my book, which felt great, lost my job and my show. And then I found this long period where, oh, all the preparations I made, all the tactics that I had for fighting this stuff off are no longer working. Like, I know how they should work, but this is too much.
Yeah.
And the guilt comes from, like, oh, now I'm talking to people and it's being recorded and it's going out in a show and it's going out into the world. I will receive validations from strangers that I cannot generate for myself. That's pretty fucked up. But I'm trying to just have this, oh, but you know, if it feels good, just enjoy that it feels good in that moment.
That's exactly right. I don't think there's any such thing as guilty pleasures. Like, if it's pleasure, You should just enjoy it.
Maybe like heroin.
I mean, if it doesn't hurt anyone, you know, that's...
if it's that harmless heroin.
If it's, fine. Yeah, that new harmless heroin that they have.
Diet heroin.
Right.
So the broader question, how have you been this past year in a historical time of chaos and you being one of the most anxious people I know?
You know, it's such a mixed bag. I have, because I'm naturally reclusive and introverted, this felt like it was a marathon that I've been training for forever. So in some ways, it hasn't been that difficult. I worry that it's made me even more agoraphobic. Just because the few times that I do, like, I'll go outside just to the front yard to let the dog out. And if I see somebody who's walking by, I mean, I feel it in my heart and I have this like panicky sort of thing. And I've had my first vaccine. I get my next one in like a couple of days. And so I should start to feel this, like, this comfort. So I do have some concerns about that, but I would say in so many ways, this pandemic has had a lot of really positives for me. I mean, there's been a lot of negatives. Like, my grandmother died of COVID. I mean, it's not been, you know, I opened an independent bookshop in the middle of a pandemic. It's been open for a year. Literally, we've never had a single person in the door. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff that's like, this is not a good idea. But I have been able to do a ton of things that I never would have been able to do. Like, you know, the Mayo Clinic asked me to speak about invisible disabilities. And, you know, they had asked before and I was like, I can't, because my invisible disability is anxiety and I can't travel and I can't know. And all of a sudden they were like, oh, well, we're going to do it virtual. And so I was like, I guess I can. And I'm able to do like these podcasts and I'm able to do, you know, my virtual book tour and so there are so many things that I would look at in some ways and be like, okay, well, it sucks that I can't do, you know, an in-person book tour and the bookstores are closed and all of that. But at the same time, I'm super lucky that I'm able to do this from home. And especially with, you know, with anxiety, and I think this is going to be so much easier. And then I had so many great fellow authors who reached out and were like, I'll moderate one of your tours. And so my tour is all like Judy Blum and Neil Gaiman. And like, I mean, it's just like people that I'm like, are you kidding me? That would never happen in real life. You know, I hope that when we come out of this, that we're able to keep some of those lax rules, some of those things where people before would be like, oh, no, you can't do it that way. Oh, no, we're not. And I think maybe now we've kind of seen, like, actually, we can do anything. I mean, we really can. Everything that you're like, oh, there's no way. There's no way that we can't open the bookstore we have to open by Christmas. And then you get to Christmas and you're like, no, people are going to die. Nope. Okay, we're just not going to. And then you just realize the rules are not as set as you think maybe they are.
I wonder, does that give you a little more gumption for the world in general? Like, oh, I don't like going into the office. Now everybody will stop having offices. And I'm like, oh, the things that drove me nuts before maybe just weren't as entrenched as I thought they were. There's more possibilities.
There absolutely is. I think it drives certain people a little batty, though. My husband is a big traveler. Like, before this, he was gone way more than he was home. And, you know, most of it was for business, but he also would just, you know, constantly be in Japan and doing different stuff. And, you know, for the last year, he hasn't traveled at all. This is the most time I think I've spent with him in the 25 years that we've been married. And, you know, I keep saying, like, you know, this is a really good thing for you to learn, that you actually continue to do really well in your career. You don't actually have to go to all these different, you know, business places. And he's like, yeah, but I would have done better if I would. And I was like, yeah, but what I'm saying is you can do less. Like, I think all in general, we can look at just look around and be like, oh, actually, it would be okay if the kids' school doesn't start until 10 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh, it actually would be okay if we, you know, gave them longer periods of time to fill out their homework or maybe take homework away altogether. And I mean, it's just interesting to be able to look at things in a very different way.
More with Jenny Lawson in a moment. You know what I like? I like when things are easy. Man, easy things are just the best, because obviously there are plenty of parts of life already that can be very, very difficult. So bring on the easy. My favorite easy things, I have to admit, are when something seems like it would be difficult, but turns out to be easy. Oh, I love that. Case in point, building your own website and web presence with Squarespace. I did this years ago and found it to be delightfully simple. I can build a site, make changes, redesign everything if I want, all very simple. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. You don't need to be a web guru. You become the guru. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. They accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Upload video content, organize your video library, and showcase your content on beautiful video pages. You can even sell access to your video library by adding a paywall to your content. So why not get started now? Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/depresh to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. squarespace.com/depresh.
I've been challenged by the word homework because I want to ask my daughter, have you done your homework? And like, you're home all the time.
It's you know, all homework.
So I like to mix it. Have you performed your academic responsibilities? Just try to euphemism it up a little bit.
Right.
I keep getting asked, and this has been going on since the beginning last March, as if I'm qualified as a person with depression, advice for the normies. Like, okay, you're someone who likes to stay at home and is pessimistic about the future reflexively due to chemicals or trauma. How can the rest of us handle this? Do you get asked that, and how do you answer it?
Oh my God, I get it all the time. And I think it translates to like, the world has been shitty for you for a long time. Yes. Now that it's shitty for the rest of us, how do we deal with this?
Our temporary inconvenience that is your lifelong curse, how can we get another advantage over you?
Exactly. the thing that I have told people is that it will pass, that, you know, check on your friends, especially the extroverted people, because they're not doing well. Mm-hmm. You know, reach out as much as you can to everyone, even the people who feel like they are doing well. Although I would say if you're reaching out to me, please do it by text, because people call me on the phone and I'm just like, why would you even do that? Like, that's it's offensive. It's so, yeah. Somebody tried to call me on FaceTime the other day.
A stranger?
I was like, unscheduled. Well, I mean, not a total stranger, but like somebody
Strange enough.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who would call me on the phone really is strange enough, other than my mom. She calls. But aside from that, if somebody calls, I'm like, there must be an emergency, because for everybody else, I text them first and I go like, are you okay for a phone call? Because that's what I want.
That's proper now.
Right?
I have a very good friend who called me 10 years ago, and I thought something was wrong. I thought he was checking on something. We had done a little work together. I thought there was a work thing. Then I realized, oh my God, he's just visiting. He's just
so
called
weird.
Me to visit, and he lives across town. And, you know, we're still friends, but I remind him all the time, don't ever do that. Remember that time 10 years ago?
Right. He's a monster. That guy's a monster.
And I know that that's in him now, and I can right? I can prepare. So here's the thing. when I saw that in the midst of all this, you were my anxious agoraphobic friend was opening a bookstore. I thought, yes. Okay, now she's gonna, this anxious friend is going to be a small business owner. Yeah. In a world where books are often just transmitted electronically. Maybe she'll have to talk to strangers and recommend things. I was dubious. Why, Jenny Lawson? Why?
Yeah. I asked those questions myself for a very long time before I finally was like, no, maybe this is a good idea. So bookstores are my sanctuary. They're what I imagine other people, how they feel about churches. They're like my safe place. So bookstores and libraries, those are the two places that I feel comfortable no matter what. And if I'm on a vacation or I'm anywhere out, if I see a bookstore, I'm going to go inside, even though I've just left a bookstore, because I'm going to feel like, oh, it's okay to be quiet. I can lose myself in these books. I can find friends that I don't have to like physically interact with or talk with. And so...
By friends, you mean fictional characters?
They're still my friends, John. Okay. They're all still right. My friends. Right. Some of my best friends are fictional characters.
Fair enough.
So yeah, so Victor had been, you know, pushing, because he's an entrepreneur and he always starts businesses. And, you know, over the last, you know, I don't even know how many times he's been like, let's do this, let's do that. And he'll go off and he'll do his own stuff. And this time he was like, let's start a bookstore. And it was the first time I said, oh, maybe. Okay. Okay. I could see that. And of course he's like, oh, the one thing that I pick that will not make any money. And I'm like, well, yeah. So we opened an independent bookstore in the middle of a pandemic. It's just the worst possible decision, and also completely saved me, because it's literally the only place that I can go to, because I can't leave the house because I have so many autoimmune disorders and problems. And so once a week when nobody is up there, I get to go to Nowhere, and that's the name of it, Nowhere, and just read. And one of the saving graces of Nowhere is, first off, that we have like a great community of people who order things, and we do like curbside, you know, pickup and all of that. But one of the biggest things that we did when we first started is, I was like, let's have a book club, but I don't want to talk to people. So let's have a book club where like I'll pick a really weird book once a month and we'll send it out. And then like online, we'll have like a discussion on like the blog or on Facebook or whatever. And people can read it when they want to, and they can join the discussion when they want to. And like, there's no rules. And I thought, if I could get, you know, 100 people to join, then I at least sold 100 books that month. And so that's something, like, you know, and now there's like thousands of members of this book club. And it's to the point where it makes such a difference to, I mean, not just to the bookstore, and we're able to, you know, keep all of our employees and pay our rent and, you know, do, you know, like not lose money every month, but also it's made such a difference to all of the authors. Because especially there's a lot of them that are, you know, maybe authors that you wouldn't have heard of before. And they would do these great printings. And then because of COVID, like normally, you know, I would just send them an email saying, here's some questions. And then I'll, you know, email them to the other people. But since they're all home, I've been able to just do Zoom calls with them. And, you know, people come on. Yeah. And they come on live and we just drink and talk and visit and talk about books. And it's such a strange, wonderful, accidental, loving community. I don't know. It's just great. I feel very lucky in a lot of ways, but especially because in this last year, every time that I would start to get to like a really low depression, for me, my depression looks like numbness and absolute, like no energy at all. And so I would have these like week long periods where I would just be like, I cannot do anything. I can't function. I cannot. But what I could do is read books. And so I could take all of these advanced copies of books and go through and be like, well, I'm picking the book for next month. This is part of my job. And I would just sit outside in the sun and I would read. And it felt like I was getting something accomplished, and it saved me, which is a wonderful thing. But it also, I wish that I could get my head to understand that it's okay to just enjoy reading just because reading is great, and that it's okay to be like, yeah, guess what? Nothing happened this week except that you read a book or you watched Doctor Who or you just survived. I'm still working with my brain to be like, look, you don't need to have a reason.
There's no quota system. There's no bar you need to reach.
Yes, exactly.
Do you miss people? Do you think you'd be seeing more people? Do you think you'd be enjoying face-to-face human contact if it wasn't for COVID?
I do miss people, but I miss people in a very narrow sort of construct. I do not miss parties and traveling or, you know, any of that stuff. But I miss being able, like, I have one friend here in San Antonio, and a year ago, I would call her and say, let's meet up and have a burger and some vodka. And I really, really miss that. And I miss being able to, you know, see my parents, and I miss, my daughter being able to perform in plays and, So I mean, definitely I'm ready for it in a way. And I do have the cabin fever thing, but there is a little part of me that when I see people talk about like, oh, things are going to start to open up, I'm like, no, I'm not ready yet.
I'm not ready to open up.
Right? Can we just stay in our blanket forts a little bit longer? Is that okay?
My wife and I were watching a movie. This was a couple months ago. And one of the scenes was in a Mexican restaurant, but like a really tacky Mexican restaurant, like the free chips and the absurdly large margarita and sombreros and the whole noisy hard tile floors. And we both were looking at it. We both just said, doesn't that look so fucking great? Don't you just want to go to that horrible, horrible place and love it so much?
Like, yes.
You know, and I knew that already about our friends and our families and everything, but like Mexican restaurant, that's a curveball. I didn't think I'd want to get to that. Right? So
or buffets.
Strongly. Oh, buffets.
Man, the buffets. Yes. I was watching a movie the other day and somebody was blowing out the candles on the cake, and I was horrified. I was like, they're actively blow. I was like, that's not coming back, right? That's not coming back.
No, no. I think, yeah, birthday cakes where you blow in public, I think handshakes, a friend of mine said, no, handshakes are gone.
I hope so. I hate handshakes.
It's so gross. Like, let's take these skin parts and then just rub them up against somebody else's.
Yes.
What were we thinking for generations?
I don't get it. And like, I'm a hugger. So I'm not like against germs.
Yeah.
But if you're going like ice, it's either one or the other. It's either wave or hug. Like, that's it.
Don't do the finger intertwined.
I just want to touch your fingers. Why would you want to do that? I just want to see how many you have. Why? Don't do that.
I've made it a goal to be a hugger when things resume. I was probably last a hugger like age 20, 21. And then life has been beating me down for the subsequent 30 years. I'm ready to train. I need to find some pamphlets. I need to find one of those YouTubes where people explain how to do it.
You're ready to love again.
Yeah, it's going to be like learning to play the oboe or something. Like, I'm going to try to develop a skill.
We're going to do it so awkwardly. We're all going to be hugging in the most awkward ways.
Yeah.
And like, we aren't going to know how to have conversations. And
and us tall people, we're going to be slamming our elbows into the side of people's heads.
Yes.
It's going to be a disaster. We're going to need helmets, elbow pads. More with Jenny Lawson just ahead.
We are the host of My Brother, and Me, and now, nearly 10 years into our podcast, the secret can be revealed. All the clues are in place, and the world's greatest treasure hunt can now begin.
Embedded in each episode of My Brother, and Me is a micro clue that will lead you to 14 precious gemstones all around this big, beautiful blue world of ours.
So start combing through the episodes. Let's say starting at episode 101 on.
Yeah, the early episodes are pretty problematic, so there's no clues in those episodes.
No, not at all.
The better ones, the good ones, clues ahoy.
Listen to every episode repeatedly in sequence. Laugh if you must, but mainly get all the great clues. My Brother, and Me, it's an advice show, kind of, but a treasure hunt, mainly. Anywhere you find podcasts or treasure maps, My Brother, and Me, the hunt is on.
Max Fun Drive 2021 is coming. It'll be May 3rd to May 14th. To get in the spirit, we asked folks like you to let us know what maximum fun and our shows mean to them.
You know, the Maximum Fun Network is really important to me because it is not just a collection of podcasts, but it is a lifestyle and a value system.
The podcasts frequently and deftly float between meaningful and irreverent, in one moment drawing attention to social issues, and in another making dick jokes about Klingons. It shouldn't work, but it does. And I have to believe it's because Max Fun's podcasts are, at their core, thoughtful and kind and human during a time that has often felt cold and isolated.
So keep being great and doing what you do.
Max Fun Drive will be May 3rd to May 14th, 2021, and you won't want to miss it. Brilliant eps, drive exclusive gifts, and maybe some surprises. Want to directly support the hosts of the show we just jumped into? Come back May 3rd for Max Fun Drive.
In your book, you write about your TMS treatment. Mm-hmm. And it's a type of treatment a lot of people don't understand. And even if you do understand it, it's hard to even understand why it works and how it works. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, like what it is and what your experiences were with it.
So it's called repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation. And it's basically you go in every day for, I can't remember how many days it is. It's like 35, 40 maybe. And they put this magnet on your head and they pulse these magnetic waves into different parts of your brain. So
it feels like a shitty woodpecker, I'm told.
That is exactly what it feels like. It's so uncomfortable, but you get used to it. Like after the first couple of days, I was like, oh my God, this is really, really painful. I had such a headache. And then by the third day, I was like, oh, I could sleep through this if I needed to. I mean, it's like anything. You could get used to, you know, anything awful. Yeah. But it stimulates the part of your brain that, if you have depression, it stops working. And on the other side is where your anxiety is. And, you know, theoretically, it slows down that side because people with anxiety, it's overactive. Mm-hmm. So I went in, I had both lobes of my brain done. And typically you really only have it done if you have treatment-resistant depression. So you have to have gone through a lot of different treatments before you get there. And about a third of the people who do it don't have any, there's no change at all. About a third of the people have some change, and a third of the people go into remission completely, which I cannot even imagine what that.
Like they just are fine? They just
emerge? Fine. They don't have to take medication. They're cured. They're cured. And these are people who have been, I mean, like, you know, I've been through 9 different types of antidepressants. I've been through antipsychotics. I've taken all of them. I mean, you really have to, you know, I don't want to say fail at the medication because it's the medication fails you, but you really have to go through a lot to get to the point where, you know, so the fact that these people, you know, were able to go into remission, I was like, okay, well, sign me up. I'll try that.
Yeah. One and three or two and three,
right?
Those are good odds.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, I fell in the middle group where it very much helped my anxiety, like to the point where for quite a while, maybe 6 months, I didn't take any anti-anxiety drugs at all. which is a very big deal for me. Yeah. And on my depression, it took me from a very, very deep depression that I was in, like deeper than I thought it was, to about the level that I am right now. So it did, it made a really big difference. For me, it didn't last that long. About 9 months later, I started to, you know, feel it again. And so within about a year, they were like, let's go ahead and do some booster follow-up stuff. And so I had another, you know, month's worth of treatment. And again,
do they repeat the same thing?
Exactly the same. Yeah. Okay. They, I mean, they go in and they look for, because everybody's brain is different, right? It's just like everybody's face is different. And
yeah.
So they go in and they're looking for the homunculus. And so you're holding your thumb up and they keep moving it around, the magnets around on your brain, until they finally hit something that makes your thumb go down. Like it's the weirdest thing.
And, wait, and you're the literally whole time, you're holding,
oh,
your
literally
thumb up?
You're doing the Fonzie. Yeah. You're,
and then they do something that makes you drop your thumb.
It makes you drop your thumb. Yeah. And they, so
with
they
magnets?
Find, with magnets. Yeah. They, so the homunculus in your brain, there's, it's all these different parts that relate to, so one is your thumb, one is your, there's all sorts of different things. But the easiest one that they can find is, they were like, we're going to find your thumb. And I was like, this guy's a terrible doctor. My thumb is on my hand. What is wrong with you? And he was like, no. We're going to find your thumb in your brain, because we know that the part where depression is, you know, this far away from where your thumb is. And so, yeah, so you hold your thumb up and they go and they just keep moving it. And the entire time I'm looking at my thumb and I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done. There is no way they're going to turn a magnet on. And all of a sudden, and then I was like, what? And I'm like, what just happened?
It's puppetry, basically.
It is. It absolutely is. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. So, yeah, I was like, well, this is witchcraft. But I'm in. I'm totally in. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and you're sure that's not just a crazy person who got into the room?
I mean, it might
with
be
a bunch
that
of
too.
Magnets.
It yeah. might be that too, but there also were some nurses and the
okay, yeah.
No,
it was a pretty convincing act.
And it is hell to get the insurance to pay for because they don't want to. You know, they're just like, maybe you should try more antidepressants. I'm like, oh, I have for decades. Can we also try
maybe
this?
Maybe you just don't need that.
Maybe. Oh, my God. If I had, if I had a dime for every time an insurance company said, I don't think you really need that, I wouldn't need an insurance company because I could just pay for my antidepressants like that. It's so crazy. Every single time that I start to get where I'm like, okay, finally, we figured it out, then something happens and my husband changes jobs and so I have to change insurance and it starts all over again. And I every time I go straight into it, I'm like, look, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, you don't need antidepressants. And then you're going to send me another thing and you're going to be like, oh, you have to do this appeal. And then you're going to say, oh, okay, you do need antidepressants, but you don't need the brand name, even though my doctor says I do need the brand name because I have an adverse reaction to the generic. And then you're going to say, no, And then you're going to be like, okay, you know, keep paying for your thing, which I have this entire year, $300 a bottle. And then they will come out and say, okay, fine. We will cover it. And I will go in and it will be more expensive because they are charging me a penalty. And so I'm literally getting charged more money to have my insurance. It's so, so crazy. It is so completely, insane and wrong. And especially because, you know, when you're sick, you have less energy to fight than ever before, which they're depending on. And then
you're
when you
least positioned person to do the battle that you have to do.
Exactly. Yes. And then when you have, you know, depression, you also have your head telling you, like, you don't really need this and you're taking money
you
away from your family.
It.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And so when they say those words to you, you've already heard them because that's the crazy stuff that's in your head. So you're having a fight against yourself and against them. It's just so exhausting.
I had a golden moment that to me, I've just always held on as a perfect jewel of madness, which is I was switched from the brand name to a generic. And then when I would take the generic, I would go like insane. I would just like something was really off kilter in my head. So I went to the pharmacy and I said, I think I need the name brand and not the generic because of all these things that are happening. And they said, well, that shouldn't happen.
Oh my God.
And I stood there and just savored the moment of like, yes, it shouldn't happen. Thus my appearance before you today.
Right? I want that on a t-shirt. That shouldn't happen.
That shouldn't happen. So the book is out and people are reading it and people are finding great joy and comfort in it. The masses are exulting that there's a new Jenny Lawson.
God, I hope so. I think that's probably not right, but I like it. I'm going to pretend that's right.
Let's go with it. Let's go. It's my blurb for you.
I love it.
A lot of the book, like a lot of your books, are about really hard times that you've had and not doing well and making some jokes about it. But, you know, there's not a lot of happy endings. There's not a lot of everything's okay. There's not a lot of homespun wisdom and now you'll be fine. What do you think? And your books are phenomenally popular. You're a hell of a writer, but why do people love reading about or listening to people who aren't doing so well or people talking about times when they weren't doing so well? What do you think that provides?
I think it provides a comfort because I think none of us are doing as well as we project, even to the people who are around us, you know. No, nobody knows what exactly is going on inside your head when you think, you know, I don't deserve success or I'm a failure or the house is a mess or, you know, all of the things that never stop in your head. And I think that there's something very comforting about seeing someone else fail spectacularly over and over and over again, and you still like them. And then I think it gives you permission to like yourself. You know, it's weird. One of the things that I wrote about in this is the idea of working the program, because I have this, you know, this depression that's never going to go away. And my psychiatrist was like, okay, so here's what you really need to do is whenever you're out of your depression, you need to do all the things that you can. You know, not just your medication and all of that stuff, but also, you know, you need to be drinking more. You need to sleep when you need to sleep. You need to, you know, take a walk. You need to take a break. You need to forgive yourself for not being able to do all the things. And
wait, drinking more water or drinking more vodka?
I mean, a little bit of both. You know, I didn't ask for details so that I could continue to have
green light's a green light. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm healthy. It's keto. Vodka is, there's no carbs. It's like working the program of here's what I need to do to stay out of the depression as much as I can. And one of the things that I come back to over and over again is I need to treat myself at least as well as I would treat my dog. You know, my dog needs to drink fresh water and my dog needs to go for a walk and my dog needs to sleep. And so all of those things where I'm like, oh, I'm such a failure because I couldn't get up in the morning and I'm so tired but if the dog is laying there, I wouldn't be like, that dog's a loser. I hate him. You know, I'd just be like, oh, look at that dog, you know,
guess he needs to rest.
Right. Like treat yourself at least as well as you would treat a dog. And I don't know, somehow that it makes it better.
That's why people need to have dogs. Yes. I say it over and over. Get a dog.
Exactly. My cats are glaring at me. I love you guys too.
It's just a little different kind of love. Jenny Lawson, thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Thank you for having me on. This is the most social interaction I've had in a long time. And I was a little rusty and you made me feel good.
Jenny Lawson's new book, Broken, is available wherever books are sold. I admire a lot about Jenny. I mean, let's be honest, her book sales, for one, and her writing skills, but more importantly, the hard work that she puts in to understand her mental health challenges, anxiety, depression, and she's doing that work even as those challenges, that anxiety, that depression, are trying to sap her ability to find out more about them. It's really, really hard work. Always kind of bugs me when people portray folks with anxiety or depression as being you know, kind of lazy or just sitting around or just, you know, not accomplishing anything, because those people are often working harder than anyone you know. Like, okay, look, you don't have to look at the process of dealing with mental health issues as a war, but if you want to, you can. Or at least, how about this, an insurrection? Because here are these forces within your own head that are working against your own head, that are looking to topple the regime of your brain. And you have to summon an army to fight back against the insurrectionists, to fight on your own soil. Jenny Lawson works so hard to figure out who those insurrectionists are, what they're up to, how they're going to attack, and how to keep the rest of the head safe from them. And that ends up being her biggest advantage, knowing what she's up against. She might not be able to wipe out the enemy, but she can do her absolute best at keeping it contained. Next time on Depression Mode, trauma. An event too large, too scary to comprehend, gets lodged in your brain and causes trouble for years. So what can we all expect from the trauma of COVID?
I think psychologically, when I watch a movie, John, and I see people in a bar talking, I'm like, hey, they're not wearing masks, right? So psychologically, something's going on with me, right? That I've integrated this idea of a protective shield around my face and around my psyche in some ways from this unknown terror.
The shared trauma of COVID-19 and what comes next. We love it when you recommend Depression Mode to friends. It might help them. Also, something that matters a lot, hit subscribe. Give us 5 stars, write reviews. That helps more people find out about the show, which helps our mission of getting those conversations happening. We're trying to change the world here. We're trying to change society. We really appreciate your help. I want you to know that the Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24/7 for free at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. The Crisis Text Line, also free, also always available. Text the word HOME to 741-741. Depression Mode is your show too. We're all on the same team. So let us know who you want me to interview, what issues you want to hear more about. We take requests. You can email us. Our electric email address is depressionmode@maximumfun.org. We're on Twitter and Instagram at @depressionpod. Or to reach us, you could just light your saddest candle and it will summon us unto you. That's not actually true. Our Depression Mode newsletter is available on Substack. Search it up there. I have notes and thoughts and discussions on all our episodes as they come out, plus some fun and silly stuff too. It's free to subscribe. I'm on Twitter @JohnMoe, all one word, same on Instagram. Depression Mode is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. Special thanks to Kristen Bennett, who helped a lot in getting the show off the ground. Our theme song, Building Wings, is written and recorded by Rhett Miller of the rock and roll band, The Old 97s.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out, building wings, building wings, building wings.
I'm John from Cleveland. Breathe. You've got this.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun, because what's more fun than chronic debilitating mental illness? I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.